Skies.
I remember when Alex was about, he was about 8 years old, excuse me, Biggs, when he was about 8 years old, and I came to get, he and his brother were living with their mom in Oregon, and so I went over to get him, and Reagan was president. It was getting near the end of Reagan's term. It was like 87 or something like that. And so we're having this discussion about something, because Alex was always like to talk about all kinds of stuff, which is, you know, he inherited it from me. But he said, "Dad, do you like Ronald Reagan?" You know, and I despised Ronald Reagan, but I didn't want to really tell you that because I wanted you to make up your own mind.
By the way, I remember you said that map that said the world according to Reagan.
I still have that poster somewhere.
That's a great poster. Yeah.
But
wasn't it like godless savages or something for the USSR?
Yeah. Well, that was Africa, I think. But anyway. Yeah, that was like communism, and you know, anyway, but everything's distorted. But anyway, so he asked me what I thought about Ronald Reagan, and do you like Ronald Reagan? I said, well, and so I'm trying not to, because I really want him to think for himself. I didn't want to just tell him what to think.
You guys were always great about that. Like, you would tell us your opinions, mom was, but you'd say you could make up your mind. Yeah. Mom was like that, too. She had strong opinions, but she's always like, you could decide for yourself, you know, left and
but anyway, so I'm kind of giving him the, you know, well, he is the President of the United States, so you need to respect him, because you got to respect the office, because you're an American, you know, but it doesn't mean you have to agree with him, and I really don't agree with very much he says, or does. And Alex looked at me, and he said, I said, what do you think? And he said, I don't think he cares about people like me. And I thought, you know, 8 years old, he nailed it on the head.
Yeah,
I don't think really Reagan really cared about the average people, and I think that's true of the Republican Party today. Or, you know, not all Republicans. I know some Republicans that are pretty cool people. Not very many, but but some. So if there are any Republicans listening, you probably now have turned us off. So Alex probably lost.
Oh no, they're just sitting there fuming.
But if they're listening to this podcast, they're more open-minded than a lot of Republicans I know.
Well, I'd say that they're good people. But I got no qualms with Republicans, but I do with a lot of the politicians in the Republican Party. But I would also say there's some Democrats that piss me the fuck off.
Oh, absolutely, too. Absolutely.
Just to be fair and hit that other side, because when we had the presidency and the Congress not too long ago, what was their biggest issue that they tackled during that 2 years was steroids and baseball. No fucking wonder they lost the Congress. Like, that was their big thing.
They got the health care bill through.
No. That was Republicans. Obama had to really push that through with the Republicans in the end, and that's why they won, was because they focused on the health care. Democrats were focusing on steroids and baseball. That's just all kinds of fucked up to me.
Yeah, I got to say about the whole steroid thing, just on a broader note, I think it's obscene what we're doing in the U.S. with drug use. People that have problems with addiction have big enough problems without also having to go to prison and having everything in their life ruined. And I think it's time that we at least decriminalize all drug use, so that people that have a medical problem because they're addicted to some kind of drug, they're not going to prison and compounding everything. Because then you go to prison, you get out, you can't even get a decent job anymore because now you got a criminal record. And so even if you try and turn your life around, it's an enormous uphill battle. I went to a conference last fall down in Los Angeles about this issue, and I can't remember the name of the organization. I'm drawing a blank right now, but I went to a demonstration in a park in Los Angeles and carrying the sign that says "No More Drug War," and because they're basically making war on the citizens of the United States. We are 6% of the world's population in the United States, and we have 25% of the world's prison population.
Yeah.
There's something really wrong with that. And
I agree.
Majority of those, the number one reason people are in prison are some kind of drug-related offense. More so than anything else. More so than murder. More so than rape, robbery, anything else. And there's something really wrong with that. Because it's really more of a victimless crime than a lot of those other things are, because you're doing it to yourself.
Yeah, it's when you do it, like when it bleeds out into other people, it should be hammered down. Like if you got somebody who's like methed out and they're not watching their kid or something like that,
that's a different issue.
But it's a child endangerment thing.
Right,
it's
exactly.
Still not the drug.
Yeah, prosecute the crime, not.
Although,
you know,
I do gotta say, meth is pretty fucking scary.
But you know what?
But
okay, so
locking
so,
people away isn't going to
yeah.
do any good either. You have to treat the problem.
Exactly. And locking them away, it makes it harder for them to get treated.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're never going to be able to get a decent job. They're not going to be able to get health insurance. Oh yeah, oops, common theme, here we go, you know.
Yeah.
Sorry if anybody's listening and they're offended because I'm a liberal. Fuck
no,
you.
No, don't be sorry.
I just said,
dude,
fuck you.
This is a show of strong
yeah.
opinions.
Yeah, I know.
I come swinging with everything
yeah.
I say.
And
you
Alex
have no
and I,
idea how hard I was yelling about General Zod being the best fictional president ever. So
General Zod.
He was the bad guy in Superman 2.
Okay. That was the guy.
Kneeled before Zod.
Was he the guy that did the Lexus commercials?
I don't know. Terrence Stamp? That was his name.
I think he did the Lexus commercials. But
I know that
years ago,
the guy who played Khan did Lexus. Was it Lexus?
No. Cordoba. I had a Cordoba. It didn't have leather seats though.
Didn't have the Corinthian leather.
No, it didn't. It had the velvet corduroy, way more comfortable than leather seats. I loved my. I gotta say that my Cordoba was one of my favorite cars I ever owned. I loved that car. It was so comfortable to drive. Right.
My favorite of yours was the Smallmobile.
Smallmobile?
Yeah.
My 1980 Plymouth Volare. It was really a Volare, but it said Duster on the outside.
Yeah.
So I got away with telling everybody, oh, it's a Duster. They go, oh, at least you don't have one of those piece of shit Volare. He said, no, it's a Duster.
I always wonder why it said Volare on the thing, and I was always like, it's a
yeah.
Duster, and people
yeah.
are like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, the side of the
I
car had a decal that said Duster, but the owner's manual and stuff said Volare.
I love that
but
car.
But it was a good car.
In fairness, I had a lot of good memories.
I put 100,000 miles on, 130,000 miles on that car. I think when I gave it to you, it had 185,000 miles on it. It was still running.
You know, we were just talking about... I was talking with my wife about, because we're listening to that song Money for Nothing by Dire Straits, and I'd popped up the video, and because that's what's great about YouTube, you can just pop up any video
I love YouTube.
You want to watch.
YouTube's great.
And so I'm sitting there watching Money for Nothing, and my wife is literally getting ill listening to the song, and the reason is because when she was pregnant with River... She had to listen
That's her,
to that
her
song.
First, her first child.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she had to listen to it over and over again at her work, and it was during her sick phase of the pregnancy, and so she just gets ill every time she hears it. And she said this is a real thing. Like she reads
yeah.
about it in her psychology
oh,
books.
Yeah.
But I'm like, see, I get a warm feeling because I remember you used to make the mixtapes all the time. You come to pick us up, and we'd have really fun drives.
Yeah. Well, I. Because it was 1,200 miles one way.
And because of you, I've got like 10 Talking Head records. Just I think you only had the one, but that was enough to foster my love when I got older. In fact, I kind of aspired to be David Byrne a little
like
bit.
Sitting on pins and needles.
Yeah. Yeah, Wildlife was a song used to play all the songs.
Sleeping on the interstate. Oh.
And that song got me, like... Made me kind of want to be David Byrne for a little while because he was always playing hand drums and always singing weird lyrics that were nonsensical.
He was one of the weirder singers I really, really liked listening to.
And me too, dude.
Yeah.
And because of you. And so, yeah, I got like a ton of Talking Head records.
Yeah,
I went
used
out
to
and learned lots of hand drums. And
I didn't have a lot of money for any kind of fancy recording equipment, but I had a basic cassette recorder and I'd play my albums and I'd make my own mixtapes because I... Really, and I found out that, you know, I used to buy the KTEL albums, you know, they were mixes, but they always cut out verses to make them, so they
yeah,
could
make them fit.
And I didn't really realize that when I first, so I still have a bunch of them, but I kind of quit listening to him because I really hated, because some of the verses they cut out were really cool verses. And
always drives me crazy. Yeah. And especially in commercials or movies, when they like start to do a song and then they cut it to the chorus or whatever. It's like, why the fuck did you even start it at that point in the song if you're going to cut shit out?
Yeah.
That drives me crazy. Find a
Why
piece
even
of music.
Use the song?
Yeah. Find a piece of music that works for what you're doing. Don't, like, cut it to make it work. Scorsese is perfect for this. Like, Goodfellas, you know the part where they do the whole piano part for Layla?
Uh-huh.
And they're showing, like, the whole robbery? And, like, he literally wrote that to the song. Like, he's like, I'm going to use this song here. And every point that they filmed it, they were playing it while they filmed it and, like, got it down to the bar so that everything fit the music perfectly. Like, that's how to fucking do it. Don't sit there
and by the way,
pack up a song to make it work.
I just think it's bullshit that that they've got 10 movies nominated for Best Picture. You know, you got to cut it back
somewhere.
I think it's bullshit.
Okay, well, you go ahead and make your argument. I'll make mine.
No, I'm not going to make an argument. I just think it's bullshit.
Then I'll make my argument.
Before I forget,
this is why it's good that there's 10 pictures. We have more movies flying at us than ever before.
And most of them are crap.
Well, hold on. Now, now we get, like, comedies recognized. We get movies that wouldn't normally get recognized that should be recognized.
Well, then do best genre, you know, the stuff about Best Picture, and you've got Hugo versus, which is wonderful movie, versus War Horse, which is a wonderful movie, versus Midnight in Paris, which I slept through because I was so tired that night, I conked out, and I the first 10 minutes I was laughing really hard, and then the next thing I know, the movie was over.
I think the only one I saw this year, like last year I had seen all but one of them, I think.
I've only seen about five of them.
And this year I only saw The Descendants, which I loved.
And I heard that was good, and I just haven't had time to see them all yet. And some of them didn't even come to town.
Yeah.
The problem with living in Helena is that
we only have two theaters.
Yeah, and sometimes we don't get some of the movies that come out.
And the ones that are like that are going to be at the Loyens. So you're not necessarily.
I still haven't
made
it to see The Artist, and that's one I want to go see.
I do want to see The Artist, but my wife's never going to sit through.
That's
the
okay.
Artist,
you and I
so.
Can go.
Yeah.
That'd be fun. Yeah, let's have a date. Okay.
Well,
let's have a man date.
Hugo was another one of those ones that I wanted to see, and I know virtually zero people who would have wanted to go with me, except for apparently for you.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard to do, okay, for, like, people who want to see serious movies, they think it's a kid's movie, but from what I understand, that was just how Scorsese got away with doing 3D. He told them it was a kid's movie, and it really wasn't. And that's just how we got away with doing 3D.
Yeah, because to me, I just kept thinking, how are kids gonna respond to this? Because it really wasn't a kid's
movie. It's not for kids. It never was intended to be for kids. He just told the studio that so that he could get it released.
I was talking to people at the theater last night about it. I do acting in local theater here, and I'm in a show right now, and we're open tonight. But I was talking to people about Hugo last night, and they took their kids, their 8, 9, 15, 12-year-old kids to see this, and they loved that movie. So whatever Scorsese did, their kids, I said, they didn't find it slow or boring. They didn't kind of start talking. No, they were fascinated by it.
Hmm.
So he did something maybe he didn't intend to, but...
Well, I gotta say, man, I can't come up with a bad Scorsese movie. Like, that guy is bad in a thousand.
Yeah, I'm not as... I really don't pay that much attention to who directs what for the most part.
And I know you don't, but let me throw out some for you. Gangs of New York.
Oh, no, I'm not...
Aviator...
Aviator was good.
Should have won Best Picture that year.
Yeah, that was a great one.
The Departed, which I thought
was
great.
That was awesome.
Goodfellas, Casino.
Yeah. Casino. Casino was hard to watch. Oh, my God. Some of those scenes, you know, were...
Oh, but like when you first see Pesci's character and he's like beating the dude to death with a sharp pencil... Oh, holy shit.
God, yeah.
That was based on... They actually had the mobster that De Niro was playing. Like, when they went to write the book for that, he's like, I don't give a shit. Like, they've written a million books about me. I don't care. And, like, didn't participate in the writing of the book. And then when Scorsese went to make it a movie, he was like, really? And, like, he was there on the set every day for the movie because Scorsese would be like, is this accurate? And he would say how they do it. So that movie... At least from that gangster's point of view, is accurate.
Spoiler alert to anybody: go ahead 60 seconds if you haven't seen Casino.
Now, fuck you, dude. Watch Casino. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But
they show you
the
end
scene
of the
movie
at the beginning anyway.
Yeah, the scene where Pesci and his brother get beat to death with baseball bats and they get buried in a shallow grave and they're still alive.
Yeah.
You know, they're still breathing.
And he had it coming, quite frankly.
Well, yeah, but you're kind of like, yeah. And then you're like, oh, Jesus, stop showing it. Oh, my God. Because, you know, most people really, you can only take so much violence, and then you start to get ill.
Well, and that's Scorsese. This is the thing that people don't understand about Scorsese is he does not, like, when you listen to him.
It's not gratuitous. He
detests violence, like, detests it. And so every time, and Coppola's that way, too. So every time they show violence, they want you to feel horrible for the violence because they want you to understand that it's not okay.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, it gets too cartoony in a lot of movies.
And that's part of the reason I liked the movie was because it wasn't gratuitous violence. And that was one of the things that... Here's another movie that I loved, and I actually convinced my wife, Terry, to watch it. It's not really her genre. We watched Super a couple weeks ago with Rainn Wilson. Where he's this
I haven't seen that yet.
Okay, well, I'm not going to ruin
Rainn Wilson from The Office.
Rainn Wilson from The Office. I got to say, it starts out with this theme, and you're watching, you know, and he's kind of a goof, and, you know, and this and that, and he's met, you know, his wife is Liv Tyler, poor guy, life sucks. But he's a short order cook, and he's married to Liv Tyler. It's like, holy crap.
Well, to be fair, it's not Liv Tyler in her prime.
No, it's Liv Tyler.
Sorry, I just had to throw out a little sexism there.
It's a Liv Tyler is a drug addict and recovering drug addict and alcoholic.
Oh, so she's no prize.
No, she's not a prize, but she's still Liv Tyler. Anyway, right. And
she better than Rainn Wilson ever deserves.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But, you know, Rainn Wilson plays Rainn Wilson.
Right. But, he always does.
Yeah.
Like, what else? Oddball guy.
Yeah. But he's,
you love him.
But
dude.
Yeah, he's just fascinating to watch. But anyway, and Kevin Bacon plays the bad guy. Okay. So
we can even incorporate this is the seven degrees of Kevin Bacon.
So, you know, all of a sudden, boom. And when you see it, there's a bunch of other character actors that I don't know any of their names, but I've seen them in like multiple other films. So if you watch Super and you play the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, Super's going to link you to a shitload of other movies.
By the way, really quick, my friend Lauren, she does a bunch of plays in Olympia, and she did a play with a guy who did a movie with Kevin Bacon, so she's a degree away from Kevin Bacon.
Okay, so if anybody's in Olympia, you got to meet this gal.
Yeah, she's an answer to trivia for you, but anyway. Yeah,
so anyway,
she was in the Zombie Jesus. She's the Zombie Jesus trailer that was on there. She does the reporter on there.
Which reminds me, there's another movie that just came out that we got to talk about briefly. But anyway, with Super though, and so you're like, okay, this is goofy, and Rainn Wilson decides to get his wife back because now she's gone off with Kevin Bacon, the bad guy. You know, he decides to become a superhero, but of course he's got, you know, so he comes up with this just goofy looking outfit. So he puts on his, you know, superhero outfit, and then he goes out to fight crime, and and I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but then he realizes, hey, he's got no superpowers. He can't fight. He can't run. You know, he's a 6'6" guy that, you know, doesn't have any muscle. So he starts working out and stuff. He comes up with this weapon. And the violence in this is just, it's this graphic, but it's not gratuitous. It's like, you kind of go, oh, God. You know, every time he does something to somebody, you cringe because you're like, oh, God, because you can hear the crunch. And you see the blood spurt and stuff, and you're like, oh, God. But it's not constant, you know. It's like, you know, there's only a few times that he does it. But then Ellen Page is in it, the little Canadian actress. And she wants to be his sidekick, his superhero sidekick, you know. And she's just darling. But this thing just takes this abrupt turn at the end that you don't see coming. But then at the very end... You know, and so my wife is sitting here watching.
As a spoiler territory?
No, I'm not going to give it away. But at the end, they tie it all together, and the whole movie really hangs together really, really well. And Terry, my wife, is very critical of movies and really picky about what she watches.
She is.
Yeah, because I watch a lot of...
I like Terry a lot, but she is very picky. She won't watch anything with Ben Stiller, for example.
For example, yeah.
Well, anything with Ben Stiller.
No, she watched Mystery Men.
That's not even a good one.
I know, but I'm just...
Tropic Thunder,
but that's because
Robert Downey Jr.'s
in it. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember she had that dilemma because she liked Jack Black and Robert Downey Jr., but she hated Ben Stiller.
Yeah.
And he's the one... I mean, those three drive it.
But Terry watched Super, and she, until the last 5 minutes of the movie, she was ready to say, this is a piece of shit movie. But the last 5 minutes tied it all together just beautifully. And it's a, I don't know how serious they intended this movie to be, but it's got a great message. It really does have a great message. And I just highly recommend it to anybody, even if you like Rainn Wilson a little bit. But if you like a movie that's pretty low budget, pretty well put together, pretty well thought out, Super is a good one.
Okay, let me ask you a quick question here.
Sure.
So we've talked about The Office once or twice, and you told me that you can't watch it. Like, you want to like it, but you can't watch it because you hate the boss, Steve Carell, in it, because he reminded you of bosses that you've had, right?
Yeah, I worked
Steve
in
Steve Carell is not on it anymore. He hasn't been on it this season. Are you going to give The Office a chance, or was that just something you're saying to not watch The Office?
Well, now I don't even work in an office like that anymore. I did for 20 years, but I don't anymore. I really don't. I watched about 3 episodes of it, and it just didn't really strike me as funny, probably because I was in the middle of being in an office at the time, and it was too much like that. I mean,
you'd probably get a lot of shit from Terry, too, because I know she won't even tolerate Office Space. And I don't think Office Space is different. This is the thing. Like, I don't think that truly represents like being in an office at all. I mean, I know that there's elements. I'd say there's elements, but like, come on, dude. Just tear down the drywall at McDonald's. Like that whole guy. Hey, Peter, there's tits on Channel 11.
His neighbor was awesome.
What the fuck is that going to do with being an office? I worked at a fast food job for a while. The fucking whole Jennifer Aniston thing reminded me a lot of, like, working at a restaurant. I mean, there's a lot of shit that's gotten...
I loved the rapping stuff.
Where, like, where Michael Bolton's in the car listening. None of that's really got anything. I just think it's a funny movie.
I like the Office Space. I have it. I own it.
No, I know. It's one of your favorites.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
It's one of my favorites, too. It's a great movie.
When we start talking about favorites, like top 5, top 100, whatever, I have a hard time because I have a handful I really like a lot, and
when I was in my piss and vinegar stage in my 20s, I had a top 5 and I could tell you at any point what it is. Now, if I really love the movie, I'll say it's top 5, but there's probably realistically like 100 movies in my top 5.
Yeah.
I don't really think about it that much, except for I know The Godfather 2 is my favorite. It just is. I watch it all the time.
Just to let you guys know what a nerd I am, my all-time favorite movie, bar none, is Casablanca. Just nothing even comes
close.
Did you
know that's the third version of that movie to come out?
Yeah, and originally it was supposed to be starring Ann Sheridan and Ronald Reagan.
Crazy.
Yeah, but they were under contract.
It would have been a much different
movie. It would have sucked. It would have sucked.
It would have been like the other two,
with Ingrid Bergman and Humphrey Bogart. It was just... The thing about it, you know, I own it, another one I own, but it, I have about 800 movies, I think, something like that.
I got a lot.
Yeah. But it's one that it holds up well. It's got some of the greatest classic movie lines of all time, it's really tight. It's well done. It's got humor. It's got little music. It's got bizarre, weird stuff. You got Peter Lorre, you got Sidney Greenstreet, you got Humphrey Bogart, you got Claude Rains, you got Nazis, you got French, you got the French Vichy, you got the French Nationals, you got all this cool stuff that was, and this is all pre-World War II. Mm-hmm. France had been invaded in the Vichy, and stuff like that, but it was before the U.S. had gotten into the war, which is part of the reason Humphrey Bogart could kind of do what he did there in Casablanca. But wonderful movie, and it might be a little slow for some of your listeners, but I gotta tell you guys, I don't think that's a legitimate argument though.
If you can't take a slow movie, you're probably a douchebag.
Well,
like,
you
honestly,
have,
if you,
you have ADD,
if you can't well if you can't put yourself out of time, like, and put into perspective, like, the era of the movie you're watching. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, there are some movies that don't hold up, and I will say that. But if you can't, like, watch a great movie that's survived all this time because you can't imagine what it's like to watch a movie in the 40s or 50s or something, fuck you, dude. Like, fuck you, because
Well,
like, you're supposed to, when you're watching a movie, you're supposed to be swept away to another place or another time. And if you can't even put yourself in the place to do that, you're a fucking douchebag. Yeah.
Just so you don't think that I'm some kind of elitist prick, you know, one of my all-time favorite movies, right up close to Casablanca, is Meatballs with Bill Murray. So you know, I mean, I got to be honest, you know.
But, yeah, that's a pretty different movie.
So you know, it's a.
And what'd you think of Meatballs 2?
It sucked.
Yeah,
it was bad. I mean,
so you didn't like the alien who had telepathy and
no, but you know, but I gotta say that one of
was
my
was that like an ET nod? What the fuck were they thinking with that sequel?
I was just like, I thought, oh, this will be fun. I watched it. This just blows, and I spent $5 to go see it. It was expensive back then.
Yeah, that's one of those things that's hilarious. Like when you have a movie that's so great, and then they put out the sequel, and you can tell. The producers just had dollar signs in their eyes. They're like, can't get Bill Murray? Like, well, then we can do whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah, it's like Caddyshack 2, Caddyshack 3, Caddyshack sucks.
Man. Although, I will say Caddyshack 2 is not as bad as everybody makes it out to be, but it's still, it pales in comparison to the first one.
And the original one, it's so interesting. I watched a two-hour
special feature.
Yeah, on Caddyshack a while back, and they originally, the whole story was supposed to go around, was supposed to focus on Danny.
Which character was that again?
He was the caddy. He was the golfer.
Okay,
kid,
the main guy. And then they just kept getting great characters. Great actors.
When they went to cut it together, they went, holy crap, this is not about him. He's kind of a, so he became a secondary character. And then they threw in all the other stuff.
Well, and that scene with Bill Murray and Chevy Chase. Like, they were just trying to get the two of them in a scene together, and their schedules weren't working. And there's kind of a
thing. Bill Murray was only there for, 3 days.
Yeah, and there was kind of a thing that, Chevy Chase, honestly, is an asshole. Like, if you ever talk to people.
And Bill Murray can be, too. I have a friend of mine here in Helena grew up with Bill Murray's younger brother in Chicago.
Which one?
I don't know.
Is it Brian Doyle?
No, not Brian.
Is it one of the other two?
No, one of the other ones. One that's not famous.
Well, there's four of them because they did have a show on Comedy Central where they went golfing together for this show, but I can't remember the other two.
One of the brothers.
You got the two famous ones, Brian Doyle and Bill, and then you got the two that nobody fucking knows.
Yeah, but anyway, she knew them growing up and knew him, and and he wasn't a douchebag back then, but he apparently he got kind of full of himself instead of
why just because he's been famous his entire life.
Yeah, but
I got you.
I don't
want to
go there. That's
because, quite frankly, I know it's a douchebag, but I love Bill Murray. Man.
Oh, I love his stuff. Meatballs is one of my favorite movies.
Did you know that he was, we talked about this in an earlier show, but it bears rehashing. Do you know that he was up for the part of Han Solo and heavily considered for Han Solo?
I did not know that.
You could see it, though, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And he would fucking knock it out of the park, too. Nothing against Harrison Ford.
But there would have been more humor. But Harrison Ford, though, actually has done a lot of funny stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And actually has a good sense of humor. But nobody knew Harrison Ford back then.
He is in the Borat movie, or not Borat, a Bruno movie. Oh. And he's so fucking funny in the Bruno movie.
Bill Murray or Harrison Ford?
Harrison Ford, because he comes
up. I've never seen Bruno, so.
He comes up.
Is that the one where... Is Bruno the one where he went into Ron Paul's office?
Yeah.
And started hitting on Ron Paul?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, he brought up, what he did was, he brought all these people in for an interview, and he was asking them.
And Ron Paul didn't know who he was.
Yeah, had no idea. Yeah. I mean, he thrives off of people not knowing who he is.
Well, yeah.
They know who he is, the joke gets ruined.
Well, they're not going to talk
to him. And he brought Ron Paul in, and he's basically like, undressing and hitting on him and stuff, and Ron Paul just you could tell all these people who are all about Ron Paul that don't understand certain things about him, you could tell how homophobic he was in that
well,
instant. But
I think most men I know are have a certain degree of homophobia.
Yeah, but
including my son.
It's no, not at all. But
That was just kind of a shot.
You can't, and this is the thing. If you're homophobic, I don't think you can watch Bruno. I don't think you can.
The
climax at the end is so great. Like, let me tell you what happens.
I bought Borat. On one of the, I got it for $6, and I got a used version of it. I had not seen it, but $6, I'll just go ahead and buy it. And I watched it, and there's some hysterical stuff, but. I mean, honestly,
do you realize? Just, let me ask you a question. Really quick. Do you realize the guy who's playing Borat? Do you know anything about him?
Sacha Baron Cohen.
Do you know he's Jewish?
No.
Does it put it in a slightly different light? Knowing that?
No, I just
like the humor
doesn't wear well with me after a while. I get tired of it after a while, especially 2 hours.
I think it's supposed to be a one time watch.
And there were parts that were hysterical.
Okay.
Where he and the other guy are, you know, wrestling and running around naked, you know.
Yeah.
That's more
Bruno territory. Yeah,
that was hysterical.
Okay, I gotta tell you
parts of it were really, really funny.
I gotta tell you this really quick with Bruno. Like, so the end of it, I guess spoilers, but it doesn't really matter, dude. It's a Bruno movie, but the very end of it, he fucking risked his life to do this, but it's so fucking funny. So at the very end, his Bruno character has decided to remake himself, and he becomes this wrestler, and he talks about what a man he is and how he hates faggots and all this, and like goes on and on. And then this guy who's like a secret true love comes up on stage. They're in the middle of the Deep South. It's a wrestling match. They got a steel cage around them, right? So this guy comes up to wrestle him, and it's his true love. And so they sit there and start to wrestle, and then they just start making out, like, really heavy in the middle of the stage. And you see people who are watching it, they're like, oh! Like, so mad, and they're throwing chairs and shit.
Oh,
and, like, God. He literally put his life in danger to do that scene, and it is so funny just to watch people's visceral reaction to it.
You know, speaking of visceral reaction, I was in a grocery store, Safeway, a couple of weeks ago. To pick something up, and guess what the music was? Speaking of weird stuff that you see,
was it Smells Like Teen Spirit?
No, they were actually playing the original recording in the softly in the background of Paranoid by Black Sabbath.
Yeah, isn't it weird? It's
like, holy shit, Paranoid is, I mean, Black Sabbath,
you know what
it is?
It was that reality show that he did, the Osbournes. Because of that, he became, like, accepted by Middle America. Plus, let's face it, dude, he was out there to, like, terrify your parents. Well, now it's your grandparents, and they have no idea what the fuck's going on with music at all. So Ozzy Osbourne has become this benign grandfatherly thing. Like, think about it. He started the heavy metal genre. And now, like, that's such an accepted thing that, like, he's not really controversial. He's not biting the heads off of birds anymore.
That was Alice Cooper.
That was Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, no, that was Ozzy. You're right.
I know. That was around the time he started to really take a hit in the public. But
yeah. But anyway. How much longer do you want to do this?
What do we got here?
We've been going for like an hour and a half.
Yeah, this is probably a good long, lengthy podcast here. So, yeah, it's probably a good place. So, you had any closing thoughts? Or?
Well, I just want to say this was a lot of fun. We've always enjoyed talking about this stuff. And as you folks might notice, we have a real hard time staying on any one particular subject for more than about 5 minutes.
That's how you're supposed to roll on these things.
But I just want
to nobody wants to hear any one subject for an hour.
Yeah.
You know?
Anyway, I want to thank Biggs, my son, for inviting me to do the podcast. I want to thank all the listeners out there. Hope y'all are having a great time
Except for you guys who can't watch like an old movie like Casablanca, fuck you.
But I would like to encourage you to watch those movies you've never seen before. You know, I love to watch the my wife periodically. She'll say, "What the hell are you watching?" You know, and I'll be watching some weirdo thing. It's like I watched this one, The Amateurs, with Jeff Bridges. He just did this a couple of years ago, where it's this little town. He's a little town guy, and he decides to make a porn film. So he can make money, you know. And it's wonderful movie. It's hysterical. It's got Joe Pantoliano is in it, and you know, a whole bunch of others. There's a lot of other people you'll recognize in there. Just a wonderful little flick. And I don't know, it was an independent film. I mean, that's more your deal to get into who made it and why and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I think it's a good guide to like the movies.
But Jeff Bridges also
watch.
Lives in Montana, which makes it kind of interesting.
He's married
to Montana.
He's got a ranch somewhere.
Yeah. He's down in the Paradise Valley. He actually, when he was filming this movie, here's one for you folks to check out. Talk about a 70s movie that I don't think Alex has even seen. It's called Rancho Deluxe.
I have seen it. Jeff Bridges.
Okay. Jeff Bridges.
Bam.
Jeff Bridges and...
And that's in Montana.
And, yeah, it's filmed in Livingston, actually, in and around Livingston. Jimmy Buffett's in that movie.
Mm-hmm. He does the whole soundtrack. Yeah,
at the Long Branch Saloon, of all places. And they're trying to get together his co-star. But lots of great character actors. Filmed in Montana. Pretty hysterical movie.
By the way, that reminds me of a little thing we did.
But let me finish this real quick before I forget. Anyway, but Jeff Bridges, when he's filming this movie... He's sitting in this bar in Livingston drinking, and the gal that ends up being his wife comes walking in, and she's
first wife or a second?
No, he's only been married one time.
That's not true.
Okay,
he got married.
His current wife
divorced.
Okay,
married a second one, divorced, and then remarried his first wife. I think that's what he said in A Pirate Looks at 40.
And no, not Jimmy Buffett. I'm talking about Jeff Bridges. Did I say Jimmy Buffett?
I thought you were talking about Jimmy.
I'm sorry, I was talking about Jeff Bridges. That's okay. But anyway, Jeff Bridges is sitting in the bar. If I said Jimmy Buffett, I'm sorry. I meant Jeff Bridges.
That's okay. I'd step on myself all the time.
No, it's okay. Anyway, so Bridges is sitting in this bar, and this gal comes in and that he ends up marrying. And they've been married now since shortly after that movie. But she had been kicked in the kicked by a horse. And so she had broken her nose. So she walks into this bar with two black eyes and, you know, a big bandage on her nose. And Jeff Bridges starts hitting on her. Okay, it's a wonderful
Jeff
story.
Jeff Bridges is in some fucked up shit.
Yeah. I don't know if he was doing acid, but anyway, she was just like, leave me alone, you know. I know you're a movie star. Get away from me. Because he grew up doing movies. His dad was Lloyd Bridges, who was, you know,
Sea Hunt. Hot Shots, probably the one
people know. Yeah, but Sea Hunt was where he got famous. He did this TV show where he was a scuba diver. But anyway, but he kept pestering her, and he pursued her. And finally, she finally relented, and they went on a date, and they fell in love, and they were living together for about a year. And this is a story his mother, I think it was biography on him or something. And they're talking to Jeff Bridges' mother, Lloyd's wife. And she said, they'd been living together for a year, and this gal wanted Jeff to marry her, but, you know, he just wouldn't commit to it. And so she goes to Jeff's mom and says, what do I do? And his mom says, well, I'm his mom, so I probably shouldn't be telling you this, but what you got to do, you just got to draw a line in the sand. You just got to tell him, either you marry me or I'm leaving you. I'm done. She said, but you got to be willing to walk out because, you know, he's not going to take you seriously unless you do that. She said, okay. And this is his mom telling the story, right? So she went to Jeff Bridges and said, either you marry me or I'm leaving you and I'm never going to see you again. And he broke down and married her. And they've been married now for like 40 years. So 35 years, something like that. And
it's a good move going to the mom first.
Yeah, yeah.
Mama Bridges, whatever her name is. Probably the only member of that family not famous, and you consider Bo on top of all that.
Yeah, so just kind of a cool little Montana story. And anyway, but I interrupted you. But anyway, thanks
I don't fucking even remember what I was going to say. Yeah. One more thing, and then we'll cut out, because I think we got enough for two parts here. So we'll hack this into two. But okay, so we were trying to figure out our top three songs of all time.
Oh,
and Adrian's point was like, it's a hard thing to do because you think of like just three, and then you start trying to hit things from all over the place. Like you're trying to like represent your musical tastes in a way in three, and it's a hard thing to do. But Brandon, his top three had He Went to Paris by Jimmy Buffett. And I was like, that's a pretty good pick. I don't think it's one of my three, but it's in my 20 probably.
Jimmy Buffett, you introduced Brandon to Jimmy Buffett.
No,
did you?
Dude,
his dad did.
We live in Montana. Everybody knows Jimmy Buffett.
Anyway, my top three music. I don't think I can go there right now. I can't narrow it down.
It's hard. Dude.
I have my number one song though. I do have a number one song.
Okay.
Nothing
else. See, mine was easy too. Bohemian Rhapsody. I knew that right away.
Well, mine is Still the One by Orleans.
That's a good song.
The worst album cover of all times.
What's the album cover?
It's the one with all the naked guys, from the waist up. The whole band is, you know, they don't have shirts on. They're on the cover of the album. Okay. I actually have a book somewhere that's the worst album covers of all time, and that made number one in the book. The worst album cover of all time.
I guess you could make a case for that.
Yeah, but the song is awesome. I heard it when I was in high school, and
it is a very fun song.
I never associate it with any particular woman I was with. Although now I have to say, I do associate with my wife now because we've been together now 7 years and we just have more fun every year. So it's getting better all the time.
And I love Bohemian Rhapsody because it reminds me of my friend who's on death row. Who wants another? No, I'm kidding. That is what Bohemian Rhapsody is about, though. I mean, it is a dude on death row, right? Like,
I thought maybe that was Chester Brown. I thought Chester Brown was dead.
The other two that I had actually do remind me of people. I have Stevie Wonder, Isn't She Lovely? Because that was the first song I heard when I found out that I was having Serenity. And it was the first song that happened to play when we took her back from the hospital.
She is the most beautiful kid. Oh my god.
Yeah.
And what a little fart.
Very loud too.
I don't know where she gets it. Must be from your mom's side of the family.
And then I did a lot of soul searching for this, and this is the thing. It's the other song would be Bob Seger, Turn the Page. And I don't cover a great breadth of like style of music because I like so many different kinds of music, but the truth is those are my top three. Like, Turn the Page really reminded me of going on tour, and I listen to it all the time because listening to that song fit the mood when we're going on tour. And it's fucking accurate, too, I might add. If you really listen to the lyrics of that song, that's how you fucking feel, I think, when you're on tour. Because, like, you're having fun, but then you have to go such distances sometimes, and you just don't want to be in the fucking car anymore, and the people are staring at you. Like, some places you went, I remember one town we played in, everybody was just staring at us when we went to go get something to eat, and people were just like staring at us like, what the fuck are they doing here kind of thing. We came up with a trailer and there's like 11 of us walking in, and they figured we're in a band or something, but it was a really small town. They're just like, what the fuck are these guys all about? And you're trying to be nice and stuff, but at the same time, you're like, I just want breakfast and some coffee and to not be stared at. You know what I mean? So
I've never been on tour. I don't know. But I've told your story about your touring to, I have several friends who are musicians, and they're all jealous that you got to do it. Because every one of them has wanted to do a tour and have never been able to pull it off because you have to put your whole life aside to do it.
You do. Yeah. And the fact that I got to pull it off when I did, that was the last possible minute I could have done it.
Yeah.
And if my wife had not been so understanding, it wouldn't have happened because she told me that she would leave me if I didn't go and do it because it was all I could talk about when we got together.
Yeah. Well, I was,
I found out she was pregnant, and I was like, fuck. Yeah.
I even supported you on it financially a little bit.
Yeah.
But I didn't have a lot to give you, but... okay, one more song in my top. Three is tough for me.
It's hard for everybody. But it's fucking almost
another
impossible.
One that just this. God, okay. Well, here it comes. Are you ready?
All right, so we got Still the One and
Still the One and another one would have to be The Big Grand Coulee Dam by Woody Guthrie.
I don't think I know that one, but I know Woody Guthrie.
Yeah, and
He did This Land Is Our Land, people.
Yeah.
He wrote that. Yeah. Which, by the way, that song...
He was the major inspiration for Bob Dylan getting started.
And can I say something? That song, This Land Is Our Land...
This Land Is Your Land.
Right. Look it up on the internet and look beyond the two lyrics that you learned in school.
Read the whole thing. It's
that
amazing.
That song is such an anti-establishment song.
Totally.
And I never fucking realized it because when you just listen to it, this land is your land, this land is our land. Like, you don't realize what he's really singing about. And when you get into more and more lyrics, you're like, holy shit. Like,
Woody Guthrie
he's basically just tearing down
he was a radical.
He was in the establishment.
He was an Okie in the Dust Bowl, and he was drifted around. David Carradine, who died from auto asphyxiation here a year ago.
Bill, for probably most people.
Bill from Kill Bill.
Kung Fu.
But he played Woody Guthrie in this movie called Bound for Glory. It's an okay movie. It's got a little bit. It's just about when he used to be a union organizer. And so they were trying to organize the farm workers in California. And he got beat up a lot and stuff, but it's a little bit some cool stuff about his life, and some of it's kind of true. But anyway, this movie, the Big Grand Coulee Dam. I'm originally from the state of Washington, and the Grand Coulee Dam, when they built it in the 30s, was the largest concrete structure ever built. I mean, it
was
huge.
Was that during
during FDR's administration?
Was it FDR? Or was it like Wilson?
It was FDR,
or not Wilson? I mean,
Hoover.
Hoover, yeah. No, it was. I know Hoover did a lot of public work stuff too.
Yeah, but that was, he did it after he got involved afterwards. But
okay.
But anyway, the Grand Coulee Dam is in Washington State, and what it did was it made the Columbia River was really not very navigable until they put the big started putting dams on it so they could control it. And this song is just about that, and about that in the you know, there's a Uncle Sam took up the challenge in the year of 32 for the farmer and the factory and for me and you, and it goes on and on about how all the stuff, because it provided all this stuff, but it talks about how the Columbia River before it tore their boats to splinters, but it gave men dreams to dream of the day that the Coulee Dam would cross that wild and wasted stream, and but it's to the tune of the Wabash Cannonball, which is an old country classic, or an old bluegrass classic, however this classified.
Do kind of dig when people are talking about real life events in their songs too. Another good one, I'd heard you play it a million times. I don't remember the name of the song, but Gene, when he was living with us, he actually had me look it up on YouTube, and we were listening to it. That Ludden Wainwright song where he's talking about the shipwreck. There's some song where he's talking about a ship that sank, and I'd never thought about
Gordon Lightfoot.
Or Gordon Lightfoot,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah, that's the one. And I'd heard that song, you play it a million times.
That's right up there.
I never thought of it until he's like, well, that was a ship. And I was like, oh. And then when you get on YouTube, it'll tell you all the historical facts about it while you're hearing the song and stuff, because people have the time to do that.
But. Yeah, I don't know how people find the time to do that stuff, but they're probably doing it at work. They're supposed to be working.
I never do.
Yeah, God knows I never do either. But yeah, but that's a great song, because it tells what they knew at the time about the wreck, and so
it's a historical document of sorts.
Yeah. So, well, my wife is coming home now, so we probably need to end it so we don't have too many interruptions in our tape, huh?
It's hard for me to call you when your phone's laying out on the ground.
Oh no! All right. Well, I'm Biggs.
I'm Dennis.
Take it easy.